program. The session that we have now is called Action Against Hunger, and this is to illustrate the activities of several of the students, or many of, they represent many of the students here on the campus of McGill, their interest in solving food security problems both internationally, locally, and the many ways in which this can be done. So our first presenter of the day is Arlette Saint-Ville, and she is a native of the island of St. Lucia in the West Indies. She's currently enrolled in McGill University and reading for a Master's of Science in Natural Resource Sciences. She's going to be talking about her research work in St. Lucia, looking at how social networks influence farmer innovation. So Arlette, if you could come forward.
Good afternoon, everyone. My research topic today is one that you have heard much about in different ways from different speakers, talking about how can smallholders be involved in coping with some of the issues going forward to deal with food security and helping them make their own transformation. So this research topic looks at how are farmers right now involved in making decisions as far as innovation is concerned, and how can we better understand how they do what they do. My research is situated in the Caribbean. Essentially, there are 15 member states of the Caribbean community that are involved in this unit, this grouping we'll call CARICOM. And I'm focusing on one of those small island developing states called St. Lucia. St. Lucia is a typical case of an issue that the complex food security challenges that faces the Caribbean community. And part of that issue is dealing with two production systems that operated in parallel. One was export-oriented, the other one was oriented towards the domestic market. One was large-scale, the other one small-scale. One focused on monocropping for different member states. Those crops could have been bananas or sugar or rice. And in the other, these two production systems we're talking about that is part of this story, you had small-scale production. In one, you have top-down institutional arrangements. In the other, you have essentially bottom-up institutional arrangements. We'll call it bottom-up because really there's nothing. So if there's nothing, we're assuming there's a bottom-up institutional arrangement. That's the substance of my research. The one, the export-oriented production, is well-supported, and the other, rather poorly developed. With the changes in the global trade regimes, the vulnerability of the export sector and its vulnerability to shock was exposed. In fact, in the past two decades, the global share of CARICOM's global share to the global trade in agricultural products decreased from 2% to 0.2%. And that is valued at a surplus of about $2.9 billion to a deficit of about $2.2 billion. So the CARICOM is now grappling with these complex food security issues that have various facets. There are national, natural constraints that deals with the small size of the territories, steep topography, thin soils, low rainfall, institutional, economic, and structural difficulties. So amidst all these complex food security constraints, there is a question because production continues. Like I said in my first slide, it is resilient. So my question today is, how do social networks influence farmer innovation in St. Lucia? And how can we use this information to better design targeted policies? Like we said, we need targeted interventions to deal with the issue of food security by activating these smallholder farmers that we have learned today are underproducing. So social capital and social networks have great resonance with this research area, and it's well used in natural resource governance studies, particularly because of a few unique features. One, the groups, the goods or the services are not well developed into the market, so the market system cannot be used to deal with these services, goods, or agents. We are dealing with a grouping or an area where social relationships shape outcomes. It's an area where we need to better understand the social ecological systems, and it's also needed to design more integrative policies. So those are the reasons it's used in natural resource governance studies, and also the reason why it's needed in dealing with food security issues in the CARICOM region. So what is social capital? Social capital are the resources embedded in groups. It could be actual or virtual, consisting of mutual acquaintances. And what the suggestion we're making here is that social capital is important for all the reasons that I spoke before, all those features in this research area. There are four central aspects of social capital that play a primary role in my research, and it looks at issues of trust, reciprocity, common rules, and networks. So networks are actually a demonstration of the social capital that is held within that structure, that community, that grouping. There are three dimensions of social capital: bonding, bridging, and linking. Bonding social capital is involved when you have horizontal ties between persons in a similar group. For example, the professors at McDonald campus, we would say, if they were in good relations, they had good bonding capital. So they have horizontal ties between them. They are within a similar group. Bridging ties are involved between two groups that are separate but are horizontal. So the Carleton professors or the McGill main campus professors and the McDonald campus professors would have bridging capital if they were working together. And linking social capital is involved when you have vertical ties, ties to political agents, ties to financing operatives, so ties that are on the vertical scale, unlike the horizontal. One is internal, one is between different groups. My research didn't look too much at linking social capital, more so because of the nature of the study, which I'll come to in a little while. So my research question, how do social networks influence farmer innovation and food security outcomes? I had two research objectives. One was to map farmer knowledge networks in two farming communities. The two farming communities were the ones that lit up when I started earlier, and identify how those structural properties of the social capital that is embedded in those networks influence knowledge flows, so we could better understand these knowledge flows from looking at and analyzing those knowledge networks. This study used mixed methods, grounded within a combined grounded theory as well as case study research paradigm. This data was collected between June to August 2012. We completed 112 surveys, conducted direct observation of the farmers in question in these two farming communities, conducted 55 discussion points with community leaders, and conducted 8 focus groups. And our actors, farmers, were purposively sampled, And our research is going to take on both quantitative and qualitative analysis. Our survey questions were divided into two substantive areas. One looked at social capital and the other one at socio-spatial knowledge networks. And the questions were in these different areas. So a little bit on social network analysis, which I used to analyze the data. In social network analysis, the farmers appear as nodes and the relations between farmers as lines. These nodes were self-reported by the farmers and based on their relations. In social network analysis, farmers are assumed to be interdependent, and ties foster the transfer of resources between farmers. So we took a relation-based approach, looking at the similarities. We collected data on demography, attitudes, location, social relations, kinship, friendship, interactions, knowledge sharing, and support, and flows are typically found with other social relations. We mathematically and graphically analyzed our data using UCNet software, Nedra. And if I run out of time, my poster is on the right over there. Make sure to go have a look and please vote positively. Thank you. So, the Black Bay Farmer Knowledge Network. The Black Bay Farmer Knowledge Network, as you can see, is the most active knowledge network, the most active network in all of the farmer networks. It's not linked to kinship, neither friendship, and that's important to take note of. And if we had to pull out the most focal nodes in that knowledge network, you could see it's relatively centered around one farmer who's a node in this representative, but there is a dispersed spread of farmers around this network of reasonable importance. The Maki Farmer Knowledge Network is not the most significant of the networks identified in Maki. In fact, kinship is the most important network. That has also implications for the knowledge network. If we pulled up from Maki the focal nodes, and in red I have identified those who are of a similar kinship, those who are family members, you could see that it is essentially one central family that is involved in leading out in the Maki Knowledge Network. So my summary as I close. Bonding social capital. Maki has strong bonding social capital. And bonding social capital results when you have close associations between ties that are of a familial relationship, our neighbors or friends. These are good ties to connect, good ties to socialize, but they are not good ties to allow the flow of information in. It's a good tie to foster identity and group formation, but it increases normative pressure and it does not necessarily allow information from diverse sources, new knowledge to enter. Bridging social capital, like I found in Black Bay, was not based on kinship nor close friendship. These are horizontal ties between different groups. And according to Granovetter's 1973 Strength of Weak Ties study, these weak ties, because bridging ties are not weak ties, they are weak ties. They are not strong ties. They're not good for bonding, but they're great sources of new information. And they allow diffusion of information, trust, they foster transactions and economic growth. In fact, increased weak ties facilitate information flows. So, as I close, what can you take away from this 10-minute presentation? One, that there are structural constraints to knowledge that may limit smallholders, farmers' ability to really participate fully in the wealth of innovation that is out there. Two, this is an area for future research, and I'm really hoping to be one of those future researchers. And also, there are opportunities to better use existing social capital. If we understand what social capital, how it operates in a particular community, as policymakers, as donor agencies, as researchers, we are better able to identify and target the particular agents that are needed to support and better improve farmer innovation. So there is the potential to improve the design of food security policy initiatives and to foster innovation. I want to thank you very much for your time, and many thanks to the wonderful sponsors, the support of the McGill Global Food Security Center, and many others who contributed to this research. Thank you so much for your attention.